The Norwegian musician Geir Jensen records under the name Biosphere. He's also a mountain climber, and on his way up the sixth highest mountain in the world, he brought his recorder and released a CD, Cho Oyu, 8,201 meters, field recordings from Tibet. It starts on the China border, 2,300 meters above sea level, with a track called Zhang Mu, crossing a landslide area. I'm Barrett Golding. This is Hearing Voices from NPR with Dear Diary, a collection of audio journals. In 1980, NPR producer Art Silverman was over a friend's house, the writer Carmen Delzell. He found a box of her old journals when she was a teen, so he asked her to read some. Here's Carmen's diaries.
April 20th, 1964. I've had many journals in my life, all of which have been written with artifice and very little concern for others. This is a new journal, which I intend to fill with everything contained by my life, and I hereby resolve to fill my life with beauty. I believe this past Christmas had somewhat to do with it, since during the holidays we had a visitor named Jake, who convinced Dad that I am an individual with an individual's rights to some degree, and should be treated accordingly. The afterglow of Jake, a little dampened by the sad fact that he never came back, left us all resolving to work and study, and my decision to pursue my goals, acting and writing. Since these decisions, we sadly note that none of these have been too well advanced. However, I now ride a bike to and from school, and did try for a little theater part, which I lost. Can you lose something that you never gain? April 21st, 1964. Guess who my hero is? Ben Franklin. Really? I'm young. I've read how people wish for another chance to leave their mark after it's too late. Here are my ambitions. Number one, promote world peace. Number two, help abolish prejudice. Three, establish a cheerful and competent nursing home. Four, raise intelligent children. Five, travel the world. Now it's Saturday evening. I've completely redone my room. It looks so comfortable, and it is. We drug in, the wicker settee from the porch, and I bought but haven't paid for a wicker table from Janet. My mattress I folded in two and covered with a tomato soup blanket to form a lovely day bed. Everything is perfect for reading, tea, or conversation. My only problem, the cushions are mildewed and a bit smelly. April 25th, 1964. I know I'm not conceited, so I needn't do any apologizing. It's just that I know now that I underestimate myself often. I've done some really wonderful things. Lately, I've been feeling very domestic. I've been planning my house and looking in Sears catalogs. I've also been searching for myself, and I believe I'm finding her. I usually think seriously. When I write, though, I try to put over that cutie pie impression. I hope this journal will see very little of that false kind of writing. I need new letter paper and new sealing wax. I also need a true friend and some fake pearls. Why I ran. I'd been riding my bicycle around all day, doing insignificant errands and enjoying the sunshine and fresh air. It was about 4 when I finally made our street and turned into the drive. It's not that I had forgotten I have a rotten home life or anything. It's just that I pushed it back there with my geometry homework and past due layaways to be thought about later. The first thing I noticed when I came in the door was the smell. All houses have smells, but ours, it's sort of indescribably detestable. Dirty socks and spoiled milk mixed with catbox smells and stale perfume. I wanted to turn right then and never come back. It was horrible. From a day of sailing through fresh breezes on my bike to a night of being cooped up in a glue factory. May 5th, 1964. Dad has the most agonizing habit of making these high-pitched noises at the dog every time he comes in. He talks real loud in baby talk, and it's unbearable. September 24th, 1964. I am going to leave. This is not a rash statement. I've been so terribly angry tonight, so furiously, passionately hating my parents that I could hardly hold it. But understand, now I've washed my hair and I've cooled off. I still see, though, that running away has got to be the answer. I don't mean tomorrow or anything, but soon. I'll focus my mind on the future and just go into a place of my own when I feel something is too unbearable to hold. I've just got to get myself some friends. I don't give a damn where I get them. December 2nd, 1964. Listen, I want to graduate from high school, go to Lamar College for 1 year, a year in which all will be new, in which I will be able to expand my vision and begin to strain the bonds which hold me in and inhibit me to my parents. No longer then will I be criticized so incessantly and tactlessly. Harvey will be a senior and together we'll find ourselves. My ears will be pierced. Then, if all goes well, we'll go to Texas State. He and I will have an apartment, but no strings. See, we can be all to each other, but if by some accident one of us should feel trapped or fall in love with someone else, we'll be free. In these years, I'll learn and grow. We'll have a yellow afghan and listen to Nancy Wilson. January 6th. Tonight I tried out for a part in a little theater production of Oh Dad, Poor Dad. I didn't get it, but I learned one very good and wise thing. I'm a fake. I am really so pseudo, so unreal, I can hardly stand myself. I want to be really good at something. I have art books, but I don't read them. I try to fake my way through everything. I covet. Why can't I just be honest? I'm so damn lazy. Boy, I want to do something with my life now, soon. I've got to. January 15th, 1965. Tonight, over pots of coffee and inspiration, the kind that only comes with desperate, clutching fear that failure is right around the corner, I intend to do a biography of Louis Pasteur and begin one on Lincoln. As for studying, I just don't know how I will, you know, really sit down and learn. I do feel, however, that I might survive. When it's over, I'll write. I write about David Anderson and how I want him to call me. He did once, but I wasn't home. I'll just ramble on and appreciate my beautiful relief at the freedom I'll feel. January 16th, Saturday. My plans to study haven't worked out so well. The weather is marvelous, and I feel wonderful. I must study, but all I want to do is be outdoors. My soul is filled to overflowing with beauty. I'm going to celebrate myself and sing myself. May 6, 1965. You know I never finish or explain anything. But do you know why? Because nothing is my own, and anything I write in here is in danger of being read by my parents and thrown at me when they get mad. Daddy is really getting unbearable and practically says he can't stand me all the time. Richard turned out to be a terrible greaser, and I lost my coffeehouse job. Last year, about this time, I said I'd leave. I didn't, but things are worse now. May 18th, 1965. Today I got a letter from Linda Honecker. It is a work of art, and perhaps it will mark a turning point in my life. She called me a dying frog in a stagnant pond. I am. July 13th, 1965. I have cigarettes. It wasn't easy, but it's 9 o'clock and most of the housework is done. I'm sitting here with a low-calorie lemonade, a whole pack of Salems, and much inspiration. I'm back in love with summer. Realization has come to me, and worry just isn't going to hamper my thinking anymore. But Daddy wants me to take algebra next year, and I must make him understand that I just can't. But if he does make me, I'll have to work on it, and I'll have to pass. Dumber kids than me have passed. Mom is having the worst time with finances right now. She cries a lot and worries herself to death. She's destroying herself with worry. Money is to her what math is to me. July 23, 1965, 11:30 p.m. Mom and I went to see the Sandpiper, and I hope I'll never forget anything about it. I adore Elizabeth Taylor and the way she lived in that movie. Her house was on a cliff, on stilts, over a California beach. It was weather-beaten and rustic with cans of flowers and paintings everywhere. She had a fireplace and a mandolin and records. At 17, she had gotten pregnant but refused to marry the boy. Her parents offered an abortion to let her stay and have the baby at home, but she left and had the baby alone and raised it herself. Big Sur is where she lived, and where I hope I can live and paint and draw and have a sailboat or a baby to teach. I've never experienced such complete communion with any fictional character. Sunday, July 25th. Boy, I feel so rotten. I really hate myself. I'm getting fat and pimply and I scream all the time. Today was completely wasted and I'm utterly depressed. One beautiful thing was that it was so much like winter. Janet and I explored the end of the street where the houses have been torn down. There were stalks of wheat and reddening leaves, a deserted corn garden and puddles everywhere. But tonight has been so screamy. Mom and I yelled our heads off, mainly because I hate her whiny voice and her, "Oh, darling, Mommy's so nervous and sick. I want to cry or scream. I want to run." August 6, 1965. Boy, I know I'll never, ever have a friend as close as Janet. Today, a rainy, gloomy Friday, we sat out on the porch swing playing like we were boxing kangaroos. We laughed and we both wet our pants. Imagine, 2 17-year-old girls. And then we just got up and went in the house to eat. Well, not me, just Janet. Daddy has lost his job and I have $100. Wednesday, August 12, 1965. Daddy got a job in Houston. We're going to go look for a new house tomorrow. I can't begin to tell all my emotions right now. I'm excited, but I'm scared, nostalgic, but anticipating a great future. Oh, God, I'm so mixed up. Yesterday, I rode my bike all over town in the rain. It was beautiful. I just remember why I love our house. It's autumn. How can I live without a beautiful autumn in the park when all the leaves are so unbelievably beautiful and Janet and I walk by the deserted river in the frost? Who will I be friends with in Houston? Thoughts on moving away. 1. All past mistakes will be left behind. 2. Read impressive books. 3. Smile. 4. Aunt Nita might help me get some diet pills. I'd like to swim in a clear blue stream where the water is icy cold, then go to town in a golden gown and have my fortune told. Just once, before I grow too old, I'd like to be not evil, but a little worldly wise. July 29, 1973. Giving in to a temptation to write in my girlhood diary 7 years since the last page was written. I am 25, married, divorced, married again, and pregnant for the second time. I've kept some sort of record of it all in little dog-eared spiral notebooks since starting my first journal in the 9th grade at MacArthur Junior High School. I never really fit into the junior high school ideal, and now, safely past that special adolescent agony, I'm very glad I suffered alone and awkward on my bicycle. And I'm very glad I saved a taste of it here.
We're at 5,400 meters now, a Himalayan campsite called Palung. The recording is titled, A Yak Caravan is Coming. Carmen Delzell's diaries were produced by Art Silverman for All Things Considered in 1980. You are hearing voices. Here's David Isay.
For no less than 4 hours each day, Reverend Robert Shields of Dayton, Washington, holds himself up in the small office off the back porch of his family's home, turns on his stereo, and types. He is surrounded by a half dozen IBM Wheelwriters in case one of them breaks down from overuse.
I can do this.
Shields spins around in his swivel chair.
And get all 6 typewriters without getting up.
Robert Shields is 75 years old. He is a short, round man with an impish grin, decked out in his customary writing garb, navy blue thermal underwear and a white T-shirt. Shields was a minister and high school English teacher in this picturesque Washington town before devoting himself to his journal.
My diary is complete.
Shields is certainly not exaggerating. Over the past 20 years, he has typed between 3,000 and 6,000 words each day, keeping a record of everything that happens to him.
The entire day is accounted for. I don't leave anything out. I started in at midnight and go through the next midnight, and every 5 minutes is accounted for. 12:20 to 12:25, I strip to my thermals. I always do that. 12:25 to 12:30, I discharge urine. 12:30 to 12:50, I ate leftover salmon, Alaska Red Salmon by Bumblebee, about 7 ounces. Drank 10 ounces of orange juice while I read the Oxford Dictionary of Quotations.
Robert Shields types his diary in 2 perfect columns down sheets of 11 by 14 inch paper, which he eventually binds into ledgers and stores in huge cartons, 75 of which are stacked to the ceiling just outside of his office.
It's an uninhibited diary. It's a tell-all, show-all. It's spontaneous. I type it as it comes, and I don't correct it, and I don't edit it.
Do you read it?
No, because if I read it, I wouldn't have time to do anything else. 12:50 to 1:45, I was at the keyboard of the IBM Wheelwriter making entries for the diary. I typed diary entries since 3 o'clock this morning. I failed to mention that the Tri-City Herald weighed in this morning at 1 pound, 11 and a half ounces. That was the heaviest paper we have had to my knowledge. It lacked only a half an ounce of being 1 3/4 pounds. Think of it. 1:45 to 2:10.
Reverend Shields does have a background which might help to explain this undertaking. His father, John Arthur Shields, was the world's speed typing champion at the turn of the century. He would type the Gettysburg Address over and over again on a manual typewriter at a rate of 222 words per minute. Robert Shields says that he kept a diary on and off for much of his life, but it was not until 1972 that he began to keep this minute-by-minute record.
I just kept going, and then I thought, well, I don't want to stop now, and I kept going, and I don't want to stop now, and I just kept it up.
Why are you doing this?
It's an obsession. That's all I can say. It's an obsession. I don't know.
What are you trying to do?
I don't know. I really can't answer that. 5:45 to 6:15. I read more from the Oxford Dictionary Quotations. I ate half a dozen large Archway sugar cookies while I drank 2 cups of milk.
In his diary, Robert Shields records everything he eats. He records his blood pressure and pulse at various times during the day, the temperature outside and in, every conversation he has, every piece of junk mail he receives. He sleeps no more than 2 hours at a time so that he can record his dreams. Robert Shields has also scotch-taped a variety of his life's keepsakes into this diary, for instance, samples of his nasal hair.
for DNA purposes. It might, in years to come, they might be able to figure out my genetics from having a physical artifact.
What is this in your diary?
Oh, whenever we purchase anything, like meat particularly, I peel the stickers off and put it in the diary, because then there's a record of how much we bought and what the price of it was. 8.35 to 40, I peel meat labels from a quarry to mount in the diary. Bacon is up 20 cents a pound. T-bones are terribly high. I bought them to feed Dave, I say, Sunday evening. I don't know if they will...
It is somewhat disconcerting to see the extent to which this task has taken over the life of Reverend Robert Shields, chaining him to his typewriter on this endless endeavor. Shields, it seems, is so busy documenting the insignificant minutiae of his life that he has become oblivious to everything else going on around him.
How does your family feel about this?
Never asked him.
What about leaving town?
I don't leave town. I haven't left town since 1985 to visit my brother in Tennessee. I don't like to be away overnight because it gets me behind. If I travel to Walla Walla to do shopping, it puts me behind in the diary. I have to take notes all the time and get back, and it takes almost a day to catch up with the notes. So I avoid going out. I avoid being away. 3:05 to 3:30, I read the Tri-City Herald. A sniper. It's my makeup. It's my nature, I suppose.
What would it do to you if you just stopped?
It'd be like turning off my life.
Reverend Robert W. Shields writes and lives in Dayton, Washington.
3:20 to 3:25 in the afternoon, I took the readings given in the margin. Humidity, 51.5. Porch temperature, 56 degrees. Porch floor temperature, 51 degrees. The study temperature, 77 degrees. And the door temperature in the study, on the door jamb, 74 degrees.
Robert Shields, The World's Longest Diary. That's from a 1995 collection called Holding On, Dreamers, Visionaries, Eccentrics, and Other American Heroes. The pieces are all by David Isay, the guy behind the StoryCorps project. We continue our ascent of Cho Oyu. Weather permitting, we might even summit. More audio journals from Dear Diary coming up in a minute on Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
You are hearing voices. 5,700 meters up at Cho Oyu Base Camp. It's morning. This recording by Geir Jensen. The producer group Radio Diaries had a project called Teenage Diaries. They gave mics to teens to document their lives. Like Nick Epperson in Salt Lake City. He was 13 when he started recording.
Hi, this is Nick, and I'm going to play this piece I wrote. Enjoy.
How are you? I'm okay, it's Halloween.
My friend's sick, it's raining, it's Halloween. I can't play cello for money. I feel like a nobody. If there was some beer, I'd drink it and get out of here. Yeah. That's my song.
Hi, Mom.
7:40 in the morning, and I'm walking to school, and the sun is just about to rise over the mountains. The delighted barks of Freckles the dog. Walking down 10th Ave, getting nearer and nearer to school. I just hate going to school every day.
Qu'est-ce que c'est, Philippe?
Nat, qu'est-ce que c'est?
At school, I can't pay attention, you know. I hate it so much, I can't even pay attention in class and learn. It's third lunch. Here's a football game going on. Sometimes I like to play in that, but I rarely get passed to. Last year, I actually had a few friends. And this year, they're gone. They all just ignore me because I'm different. And I don't know what's so different about me. I mean, I'm not really strange, or I don't dress differently than others. I don't know. I don't know why people didn't want to be my friend. It was like one continuous day of depression at school. Thanks for bearing with me, and I'll talk to you when I get home. You know, when I'm feeling like really, like I'm disgusted with myself, I pick up my cello. Every time you start playing, it's like I don't have any stress at all. I don't even listen to anything. I just sort of space out. I just pick it up and space out.
Dinner's done. Dinner's ready, guys. Everybody come to the table. Spaghetti.
We always eat dinner together as a family every single night. We meet at about 5:30 or 6 and have a long dinner together and talk about our days.
Nick, do you want to talk about junior high at all?
I feel kind of sad about going, and
I don't like anything much that's going on in school. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually bored a lot of the times. Like, no one knows me. No one wants to get to know me. I just hate going to school every day.
It's hard to talk about.
Okay, example two. If
our line.
Okay, wait, all right, I got it. If two adjacent angles forms a straight line, then the sum of the measures equals 180.
Good. Okay, written exercises. Let's get our pencil for this.
Since okay. I last talked, which was about 2 weeks ago, my parents have been offering for me to take home studies, dropping out of school, taking home school.
Prove angle 2 plus angle 4
was 180. All right, this is approved.
That's enough, Mom. All you have to do is say...
No, this is approved, Mom. You can write it down.
Equations can be added, that's all.
No, Mom,
okay,
watch.
Okay, go ahead.
And so I decided, why should I have to go to eighth grade anymore if I hate it so much? I've had enough of it. There. Our first proof we did all by ourselves. I quit school because school sucked. 1, 2, 3, 4. Let me tell you about what I do every day. I get up at 7 o'clock, take a shower, do some French, read Great Expectations, and I play some cello. Homeschool is great.
I like this groove we've got. I like this new machine we bought. Let's keep this thing up. You know it, we won't ever yawn. This bright red machine has made us
You can hear the tea boiling in the back, and what should I have? Oregon mint, licorice spice herbal tea, or cinnamon apple? It's been about a month since I've been going to homeschool, and homeschool is, like, good, but I don't have the best social skills right now. What I'm saying is I'm out of practice in making friends. Like, the other night, I felt really lonely. And I knew these two girls. And they only live a few blocks away. And one night I decided, well, maybe I should just go over there and be brave. And I walked over to the house and I knocked on the door. And I went in and... it was just really uncomfortable, and I tried, like pushing good questions on her to start conversations, but we just felt really strange around each other, and it was awful, and I just went, and, I mean, if you can give me any advice, or if you could just give me some potion that would make people my age start liking me, or, I don't know. I just need to know how to socialize. I'm gonna go nuts.
This is your lovely host, Nick Epperson.
And it's been about 4 months since I last recorded. I think my voice has changed considerably. Another thing that bugs me is I'm coming down with some acne, and I wash my face all the time, and my face problem. Well, okay.
Dad? Hi there, Nick.
I was just going to ask you if you've noticed any changes in my life since I started homeschool.
I think, you know, overall this has been a good experience for you, as far as, you know, French and history and all that's concerned. But, like, deeper and more than that, sometimes I go back and forth a little bit. Sometimes I feel like, almost like we indulge your emotions or your moods or your feelings, maybe too much. And sometimes I just want to tell you to kind of snap out of it. What you're making a face. I'm going on. I shouldn't be saying what I'm saying. No, I just feel like I'm just being honest for a minute. I wanted to say.
Okay.
But you're a serious kind of guy. Just like me.
I spend too much time moping and just. I don't know. It's hard just to feel good and
do lots of things these days. It's hard to work, it's hard to learn, it's hard to practice. It's hard to do anything. There's one more thing I want to talk about. Today, my mom arranged an appointment for me with a doctor to talk about depression, and I think that we've waited too long to do this personally, and just need to cheer up. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Wow, it's a really sunny, gorgeous day. There's just a few clouds.
I've missed out on a lot of recording lately, and many, many things have happened. I decided that it'd be good to go back to school. It's time to make some freaking friends, you know? Alright.
I prepare to cross the street to West High, and I look over there, and there are just, it's pretty amazing. They're all gathered on the south lawn, and wow, it's packed with children.
I'm excited.
Two minutes to get to class.
Okay, let's try to read that for us the first time all together. 1, 2... 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, the first day of school, I think I was sort of in a frenzy. Like, I gotta find the kids I like. I gotta take notes in the classes. It was just sort of like a puppy running into, like, a house, just trying to soak all this new stuff in.
So, that was my first day.
Come in.
My brother Dietrich is seated in bed.
So Nick, what do you think? Do you think you're better or worse or what?
I don't have real identity right now. And like during lunch, like every person I go to, I'm kind of frightened because they already have everything figured out for themselves. And I don't have the skills like you do of getting people to be friends with. You know what I'm saying?
Can I tell you something? I mean, I don't know if you know this. Basically, everyone I hang out with, you know, my age, like 19, 20, and every girl has been absolutely knocked out by you, you know? You heard Lara said, you know, oh, Nick, if you're only like 4 years older and stuff. I mean, you're tall and you're sexy. You know, you got that cute hair and like those intense eyes, but you're also so musical and sort of sensitive and honest. I think you're kind of like a time bomb, you know? Or like maybe you're like one of those infectious diseases, you know? It's like you're in the dormant stage right now.
All right, Mark.
All right, be quiet.
Okay.
She goes to Davis High. She's so pretty, oh my.
3 weeks ago, I went to a party. The thing that was really cool is at this party, I kissed someone for the first time. She was drunk, but basically, when she was talking with me, all of a sudden she just kissed me on the cheek, and it was hilarious. She kissed me on the cheek, then I kissed her on the cheek, and then we just both kissed each other. It was really cool.
Hey, Nick, what's up?
Monica Torres! Woo! It's the end of the year. Yearbook day.
May I see your yearbook?
I have an electronic yearbook here. Just sign it with your
with
words.
With my voice.
With your words.
Well, Nicholas, I've had just a lovely year getting to know you, and unfortunately, we only were, like, buddies the second half of the year. So we must keep in touch this summer. Give me a call. We'll go out
when I look at it, so much in my life has happened. I've changed a lot. As a child, I was really happy, and I was really enthusiastic about everything that I did, about cello,
about my writing, about drawing, about school, about friends, about everything. And since the beginning of junior high, as I've gotten older, I'm not as idealistic as I used to be. I think I see life more as it is now, and I'm not as dreamy and creative as I used to be. But maybe it's still deep in my brain, in the storage. I'm just letting you know that.
Thanks for everything, and I think you have really nice eyes, and I just gotta tell you that.
Well, that just about wraps up it all. Goodbye, and it's been a pleasure.
1, 2, 3, 4. I like this groove we've got. I like this, this new machine we bought. This bright red long machine has made us cool.
Penny Harris, standing before her bedroom mirror, pinned a lavender corsage to the waist of her white formal. She reached for her pen and diary. Then, sitting with great care on the edge of the bed to protect her lovely dress, she began writing dreamily.
Dear diary, tonight will be the most wonderful night of my life. Oh, Brad.
I wait through every day and hope today will be the day you'll fall in love with only.
I'm hoping.
That's an excerpt from Teenage Diary, a 1965 album with the voice of Miss America, Vonda Van Dyke. We found that at the WFMU 365 Days Project. We're now at Camp 3, 7,500 meters up. The track's called Neighbors on Oxygen. It was recorded in a hailstorm. Nick from Salt Lake City was produced by Joe Richmond for RadioDiaries.org. This is Hearing Voices. From Out Loud Radio, here's Dia's Diary, produced by Noah Miller.
This is Diamani Falana coming to you. Beautiful, sexy. I have childhood memories of playing Barbies with the girls. I never was the sports type of guy. I never played basketball, baseball, or football. I was very, let's sit with the girls and play Barbie and play house and play all the games that little girls would play and do all the things that little girls would do, because inside I always felt like a little girl. I never have felt like a boy. I've never been interested in playing boy games and doing boy things has just never been an interest of mine. I've always been a little girl growing up. For a minute, my mom was like, well, I don't know really how she really felt about it, or I don't know if it scared her or whatnot, but she would always say, well, my brothers would come over, what this mother got dolls for? Well, he's going to be a good father one day. That would be her excuse. Well, he can play with dolls. That's okay. That's teaching him how to be a good father. It all started when I was about 19 years old. And me and my mother were sitting down watching Phil Donahue. And the show was actually based on gays and lesbians and them coming out to them families and seeing if their families will accept them. And it was one, everybody was pretty much cool with it, if I can remember straight. Everybody was cool with their family, you know what I'm saying? It was shocking to a lot of people. But this one story that stuck in my mind was about this guy, and he told his mom and his dad and stuff, and he was like, well, I'm gay. And they disowned him, and they just, like, were, you know what I'm saying? Oh, well, you're not a part of our family anymore. And they got really upset and walked off stage. And I remember looking up at my mother, and she was sitting on the couch. I was sitting on the floor right next to her. I remember looking up at her and saying, Mama, if I told you I was gay, I said, would you do me like that? And I remember her saying yes, and I remember her telling me, yeah, I would do you like that. I wouldn't want my children. I wouldn't want none of my children to be gay. Growing up, I didn't even know, you know what I'm saying, pretty much my sexuality. But at the same time, when I started growing into my sexuality, and my mother would ask me, you know what I'm saying, okay, on certain occasions, are you gay, are you gay, are you gay? And it would always be no, no. No, I'm not gay. Why do you ask me that? No, because I've always had that fear since a 9-year-old child that if I was to do that, I would be disowned by my family. It was kind of a scary thing for a young kid to think, if I lose my family, then what's going to happen to me? You know what I'm saying? So I kept it a secret for as long as I could stand it. When I was about 16 years old is when I found out about the club. My friend Jason, he used to always take me to the club or whatnot, and we used to always have hella fun, and I used to sneak out of my room. I used to close my door because I used to sleep with my bedroom door closed, so I would just close my bedroom door and sneak out of my window and come back at 3 o'clock in the morning. One time we went to the club or whatnot, and I had snuck out or whatnot, and when I came home, it was probably about 3 or 4 in the morning, I noticed that my window was closed and it was locked. And so I had no choice but to get caught because I had to go around. And so I went and I knocked on the front door, and my mom came. And she looked out of the curtain and she said, you're not coming in here. I said, Mama, why? She said, yeah, you want to sneak out and stuff. She said, I'm going to show you what it is to be outside. And actually closed the curtain and left me outside for like 2 days. My mama wanted to know where was I sneaking off to. And that's kind of what actually helped me bring it about to her that I was gay, because I started around 16 going to the clubs and being on the gay scene and seeing the girls and seeing the boys, and you know what I'm saying? And then when I finally sat her down, we sat at the kitchen table, and when I finally sat her down, she said, well, whether you're gay or not, I'm gonna love you regardless. And if that's how you feel and that's what you choose, and that's what makes you comfortable, then I'm comfortable with it. And it kind of shocked me because I was always afraid to really tell her how I felt inside. I was always afraid of what she might say and what my family might think. And so thinking back on what was said about the Phil Donahue episode and thinking to how my mother treats me now, I really appreciate it. And it's a blessing from God that I can have her acceptance. It's a blessing from God that she loves me the way that she does.
This is sound from the summit of the sixth highest mountain in the world. It's off the CD Cho Oyu, 8,201 meters, field recordings from Tibet, by Geir Jensen. Dia's Diary was produced by Noah Miller for OutLoudRadio.org. I'm Barrett Golden, coming to you from Peak Recording in Bozeman, Montana, and you can get to everything you heard this hour through HearingVoices.com.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of SoundImagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is HearingVoices.com.